Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most dangerous, daring, and epic sea stories ever told.
Whether facing ruthless men who prey on other mariners, or storms that turn calm seas into graveyards, those who go down to the sea and cast off lines enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons gained through their experience. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Bill.
And we welcome you aboard They Had to Go Out podcast. Before we dive into this episode, we need to provide a disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals involved and are not to be construed as official or reflecting the views of any government agency or military service. This podcast is an independent effort with no government association.
When the most is expected, the brave men and women of the U.S. Coast Guard are always ready. The National Coast Guard Museum will engage, educate, and inspire visitors by honoring the courage and skill of our nation's unsung armed service. The museum will explore the Coast Guard's rich history and current impact through interactive exhibits, STEM-based learning experiences, and leadership development programming. Find out how you can join the effort. Become a plank owner today. Visit CoastGuardMuseum.org/out. That's CoastGuardMuseum.org/OUT.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Had to Go Out podcast. Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you for helping us reach the top 40 on the iTunes charts. That's amazing on the government chart for the U.S. So anybody that wants to help us get even higher, all you got to do is like us on iTunes, subscribe, and then give us those 5 stars and tell your friends about us so they do the same.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's exciting to be part of the top 40. It's not how I imagined it, but it is what it is. That being said, if it's your first time listening, thanks for finding us. We think you're going to like what you have today. You get one. This one's going to be available on video, as well as if you're listening to it on a podcast right now. And after you listen, make sure you subscribe on whatever podcast platform you use, and make sure to give us a review. Solid 5 stars is what we're looking for.
Yeah, and you can find it anywhere at theyhadtogooout.com. It's got links to everything that we have, including that YouTube channel, so please subscribe. If you're not watching this, you can. Just head over to the YouTube channel.
And subscribe on the YouTube channel, too.
There you go. Hey, and today, we got lucky enough. Bosomate A School has one of their senior longstanding instructors, I would say, who has an approved retirement letter. I think already had the ceremony.
It's delayed.
Delayed?
Yeah, ceremony's delayed.
Okay. So no ceremony yet, but he's done working, and he's already starting to grow the beard. we were lucky enough to catch him before he left town. Where are you headed to?
I'm heading down to Charleston, South Carolina.
I thought we were going to go to New Zealand.
No.
We were talking about that beforehand. Apparently it was a possibility.
It was definitely a possibility.
I'm sure that'll come out in this.
Yeah.
So awesome to have him here. Really appreciate him giving us his time. And who we have? Go ahead and do the intro.
Name's Jerry Rohr. Did 20, it'll be 20.4 years when I retire officially, which is December 1st, which is my last active duty date. So right now I'm on terminal leave.
Right on the line.
Yeah.
What is point four?
Well, they really want me to retire May 1st, which would have been point 11. So,
yeah.
You know, didn't want to give me that 21 years, but that's fine.
That makes the math easy.
Yeah, exactly. I joined back in 1998 with the U.S. Navy. I was on an aircraft carrier for 4 years.
Which one?
The USS Theodore Roosevelt. It was out of Norfolk, Virginia. Now it's out of San Diego. So I'll probably never see that again.
Were you out of Norfolk?
Unfortunately.
Ouch.
Yeah, that was rough.
Hometown?
Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Born and raised.
We've tried not to curse on the show, but I grew up in PA. That's why I asked.
You did?
Yeah, York County.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry.
We're home little league baseball. So
yeah,
we're on ESPN every August. Grew up there. Went 2 weeks after I graduated high school. I joined the Navy. I was a signalman in the Navy. I wasn't a bosun mate. With flags.
Really? Is that a thing? That's still a thing.
It was. I was one of the last. I was one of the last signalmen. They all went QM and OS after that.
The footsteps of Douglas Monroe and never even knew it.
You should say that when they make fun of you for being a prior grad. I did two deployments. The first one was in 1999, Operation Allied Force, which was the Kosovo campaign, if anybody remembers that. And then I left 2 weeks after 9/11 happened. So we were the first aircraft carrier to start strike ops against Afghanistan. First carrier, we were underway for 159 days straight without hitting a port call, which isn't something exactly you want to read in Wikipedia, but that is what it is. They give you a nice coin when you leave the boat. You're like, oh, thanks.
Thanks, yeah.
Yeah. So I got out, did the civilian sector for about 8 months, missed it.
What'd you do?
I just worked at like Best Buy and like these little part-time jobs. Yeah. Like, I didn't really plan as I should have.
Right.
So
Dropping bombs on Afghanistan.
Yeah. Best Buy. Now I'm selling Mariah Carey CDs. Yeah,
yeah, fair
exactly.
enough.
Exactly, yeah. So I did that for a little bit, missed the military, looked at the Navy. Navy wanted me to do the whole thing over again.
Like boot camp and everything
boot
again?
Boot camp over, because I left as a third class, and I didn't want to go be a senior recruit again. Yeah. So that wasn't an option. Talked to the Coast Guard. They said there was a prior service training program, 4 weeks boot camp. Signed up for that.
Did you talk to the Marines?
No, I knew better.
Did you talk to the Army?
Actually, I was in the National Guard for 2 months right before I went to the Coast Guard.
Oh, really?
And just enough for them to give me my discharge papers from there. I didn't even get a uniform.
Really?
So, I guess I was the Navy, Army National Guard, and then the Coast Guard.
You really should like join the Air Force Reserve after that.
Yeah, right? I think you can,
service.
Right? Isn't that,
I don't know.
I think it's an option.
That'd be nice.
Or at least like Civil Air Patrol. So you'd
say. I don't think
something
that counts.
For my record, and then I went to the four-week boot camp that they had and started my Coast Guard career. And first cutter was the William Tate out of Philly, so it was a little closer to home.
Yeah. Were you like, what is this thing?
Yeah, it was so small.
This
I instantly fell in love with Eitan after doing that one.
As you should.
Oh, yeah.
As all good bosun mates
do. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's rare that we have an Eitan sailor on here, except for Bill.
Well, then I went to Dollar Bay, Michigan, which is way up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
What was the first cutter? What kind of cutter was it?
175.
175. Yeah, what do you guys do?
I was just the deck seaman at the time. So basically, all I was doing was cleaning buoys. They bring the buoys on board. I clean them, maintenance, paint, blah, blah, blah.
And for those who don't know what cleaning buoys means, what is cleaning buoys?
So you're basically...
You're a first Eitan guy, I think. You're like the first one we've had discussed.
Oh, I talked about Eitan, yeah.
Okay, well, this is my first. I was on 2 175. So so for this one, basically cleaning buoys is you're cleaning all the barnacles off it, the muscles, bringing the chain up that's attached to what we call a sinker that holds the buoy in position, checking the chain wear, checking the sinker, making sure it's good to go.
Which is a giant piece of concrete.
Could be anything from 10,000 pounds to 12,000 pounds. Make sure that's all good to go.
Weirdest thing you saw in between the muscles and the...
And a buoy?
Yeah.
Oh, God. We pulled up a kid's child slide. In Boston Harbor.
Oh, like from the backyard?
Around the chain or something?
Yeah, this was on my second boot. I was on the Marcus Hanna, years later. But, yeah, that was probably the weirdest thing I've seen pulled up.
I thought it was weird when they pull them up and it just moves. Like the whole buoy's, like, moving with life. Like things just live all over the buoys.
The bell goes off, yes.
If you guys have never seen it, like if you ever looked at the pilings on a pier, imagine that times about 20, and now you've got to go up and scrape it off. It's not clean work.
No,
that's a good way
not.
To put it. No. Yeah. That was good.
Actually, Mike Rowe did Dirty Jobs on it.
Oh,
I think he was on the Willow or something like that.
I never heard of the guy.
Aspen. It was out of San Fran.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah, it was Aspen. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Never heard of the guy?
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
It's the competition.
I know, right? he's way better.
He has a short form podcast.
A little, just
a little higher production value, but we're working on it. If you subscribe and you pledge some money, we can make our production value. We can equal micro.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Sky's the limit.
Right.
It's a challenge.
I did that. And then I went to a Dollar Bay, Michigan, which is way up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Did that for 4 years. It was heavy weather station, so I left there as a boarding officer, a heavy weather coxswain. From there, I was on the fast track of making chief because I made first up there. I was telling...
What did you come in the Coast Guard as? Did you come in as
an honorary?
Really?
They dropped me back down to an honorary.
See, that was like... So what year was that?
2003 is when I went through Coast Guard boot camp.
Yeah, that was like when service-wise. That was the same time I was coming up.
That's
like,
not service-wise or anything.
I need five years or something. Yeah.
But, wars are bad, but they're good for advancement.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, my sea time never carried over from the Navy because I was a signalman. I wasn't a bosun. So I had to. So I decided to go to Cape May for a couple years as the master at arms to try to study for chief, you know, get that, blah, blah, blah. Learned to find out Cape May was kind of a career killer just for that job. So I put in for Pat Force SWA, Patrol Forces of Southwest Asia. I was part of the Middle East training team over there. Did a year over there, basically teaching boarding procedures, VBSS, which is Vessel Boarding Search and Seizure, to all the 110s cutters that are over there, as well as the shore units. From there, I went to the Marcus Hanna, another 175 coastal buoy tender, which is up in South Portland, Maine, as a first lieutenant. I extended there for a year because I loved it so much. I love ATON. Decided I wanted to finish my career kind of giving back to the Coast Guard a little bit, as corny as that sounds. So I put in for BMA instructor, and that's where I'm at now.
That's where you were at.
Yeah. Where I was at. Yeah, I got to get used to saying that's where I was.
Trying to help
where
you. Was that? Trying to help.
Thank you.
Well, now we have to ask you. Yeah. I mean, since we've got the career breakdown, life breakdown, Do I get to ask this time, or are you going to ask?
I mean, go ahead. What's
your most dangerous, daring, or epic sea story or stories?
Okay. He's wanted to ask that for like 40 episodes.
I always wanted to ask it, man. All right, so the one that comes to mind, and it comes to mind is because it was when Pap was a one-star up in D9, so I remember him coming to the station for this. But we had
Admiral Papp, the 24th commandant of the Coast Guard, I think.
That's impressive. Yes. The number.
I write a lot of stuff. Yeah.
It is impressive. So he was a one-star. He was the command of D9 at the time. We got a case. I think it was a BM3 at the time, only a boat crew member. Wasn't a coxswain yet. Got a case about 2:30 in the morning.
And so we kind of glossed over the station. You're at Station Portage, Dollar Bay, Michigan. Heavy weather unit, right?
Heavy weather. It was a Stant at the time, which there's no more Stants, which was Station/Ace of Navigation.
Man, and I was like totally in your corner on the station thing until you told me it was a Stant. So a Stant is basically a station that also does ATON.
Well, there's a separate.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Which is why it didn't work.
It did not work.
It made no sense.
It did not work.
So you guys had, I'm guessing, 47 motor lifeboat, or
we
two?
Had, yep, we had a one 47 motor lifeboat.
Best boat ever.
25 RBS.
Also a great boat.
Yeah, it was a great boat.
And then we had a few Tambi boats, the ATON boats, which was 26, a 23, and an 18.
Luckily assigned to that other staff, and you didn't have to deal with them.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
Exactly. So, yeah, I had the good life of search and rescue for a while. So, yeah, we got a call about 2:30 in the morning, which is normal if you ever at a search and rescue unit. It's usually not at the most opportune time. Mm-hmm. Had a vessel. It was a sailboat on Manistee Island. I just remember the island it was up in the UP. It was basically two elderly people, and they were stuck up on some rocks. So it took us about 2 or 3 hours to get to their position.
How'd the call come in?
It probably went through sector and then got to us, I believe. I'm not sure exactly. I remember I was woken up from the SAR alarm. That's all I remember.
And what were you guys? So when you got the call, it was like, I'm guessing, boat on the rocks. Maybe they told you it was elderly people.
Boat on the rocks. And the only thing we knew is that there were just two people. We didn't know at the time that they were elderly.
Okay.
We didn't have comms with them yet. So
you guys are hauling up there in what?
At the time, Seed State, you mean?
What boat?
25.
Okay.
We decided to take the 25 because it was in like shallower.
And it's faster. Right?
And it's faster than the 47.
Right.
And then what? Lie to us about the Sea State.
Well, I won't lie to you. Sea State was great on the way there. By the time we got there, it was about 2 or 3 hour transit there.
That's a long transit, man.
It was
for
very
a,
long.
Yeah, for
yeah. Very long transit.
It's like a max AOR transit. Like you're at the limit.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
Well, the bad thing is we stayed up that night. I think we were probably playing video games like you usually do at a small
right.
station because
mm-hmm.
it's quiet. It's so we were all tired.
What time of year was it?
I want to say it was probably springtime. So up there,
you're in Michigan, it's cold.
Yeah,
right, right.
We probably just put our boats back.
I haven't
water.
Been stationed.
Hey,
there
the boats are in the
cold.
Water, so it's not winter.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah, 6 months out of the year, the boats are in the water. So we get comms somehow, and this is back probably 2004, 2005. So I'm really trying to remember how this went. Got there, made comms with the people. We found out that they're both elderly. I think they were both in their 70s, close to their 80s. Hypothermia already set in. We determined that because they were kind of seeming like they were a little out of it. I bring this story up when I used to teach BMA school.
You're getting it.
Yeah, I'm getting,
getting it.
We talk about a lot about like heaving line training and throwing life rings. Well, in this situation, we had to use a heaving line for a life ring situation because we couldn't get the heaving line to the person, or the life ring to the person. I'm sorry.
Which brings to mind another Bosome question. Did it have a monkey's fist or one of those stupid plastic balls?
It was a plastic ball.
I hate the plastic
balls. Yeah, I know. I do.
You know what I hate even worse? 29 RBS 2? The bag.
The bag is the worst thing ever.
The bag is the worst. Whoever. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to talk smack on policy writers, but whoever whoever was responsible for that needs to revisit the issue.
Yeah, we should carry two normal 75-foot heaving lines on there.
And to be honest, like when it's cold, if you dump the bag, you know, like you're supposed to dip the line so it makes it heavier or whatever, it's probably coming out as an ice block and is about just as heavy as the monkey's fist, you know, like when it hits someone in the head, which it's never done, as from what I know.
No, it's never. But,
yeah, it's, you know, it's never happened.
You know who the best heaving line tossers in the world are as we go down this? The guys who are the line handlers in the Panama Canal. They have monkey's fists about this big, and they like they practice with targets. I've never seen them miss, and they're doing 100 ships a day.
Yeah.
Best line hand, best
dude have to be
best heaving line handlers ever. We should just send Bosome mates there to learn.
I thought you were going to be like all the Bosome mates that Jerry Rohrer taught.
No.
I'm not gonna,
I'll never lie to you guys unless it'll make me money.
Yeah. So we got out on scene. We had a fireman on board. I remember he wasn't the greatest heaving line thrower, but the BM1 that was the coxswain at the time told him to go out on the bow, start throwing a heaving line to these people.
From the bow.
Okay. And at this time, because we couldn't get close enough, it was rock bottom. So right. If we get any closer, we're going to, you know, ding our props.
So why do you pick that guy? You were on board, right?
I was doing all the navigation for him.
Okay.
Right. So
you're reading the pedometer. That's what you were doing.
The depth finder, everything
else. As you get closer to the rocks, exactly. Like you're reading the depth finder. Yeah.
And as we got closer, that's what I was going to say. The sea state started getting worse, of course.
Right.
And on the 25, I believe what the sea state's what, only like 5 feet or 6 feet or something like
six
that.
Six.
Yeah. So we were like getting close to 7 or 8. So it was getting pretty nasty. And he, to save his life, he could not throw this heaving line. Or to save anyone else's.
Right. So, his life was not injured yet. But.
No.
And was so it like, were you at a panic moment by then? You know, like you arrived, the conditions got worse, you knew they were bad.
I think it was more, maybe not panic, but our nerves were definitely heightened.
Yeah.
Because the weather, I mean, we had so much time to get there to plan on what we were going to do.
And panic was the wrong word. Rushed, right? Or maybe not rushed, but like, this is a priority. We need to get this line
once
over.
We realized the weather was getting a little hairy, we realized that we couldn't mess around anymore because these people were elderly. Hypothermia set in, so we had to find a way to get these people on board.
So the fireman knew, like, and he knew we need to make this. We need to make these shots, right?
We need to make these shots, right? So he throws them, and it's just like, you know, a rat's nest. I don't know if you know if that.
Oh yeah,
obviously you guys know what that means, but just a bundle of line going across.
That goes like, 10 feet, and stops him.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So he threw a 3 or 4. I got out there, not trying to, you know, blow my own horn. But I got first time. But the old man didn't grab the line. So as I was telling him, I was like, I'm going to throw the line to you, grab it, put it underneath your wife's arms, tie it, and we'll bring her on board first. Well, he couldn't catch it to save his life. So finally I got it over his head. He got it. We brought her on board. No issues. She was fine. Got the line to him. Had him tie it around. As we're doing this, we're bringing him in. He's throwing up as we're bringing him on. As he's throwing up, we start to throw up as we're taking it.
Sympathetic puke.
Yeah. So we get everybody on board. The coxswain looks back at us. He starts to throw up outside the window.
Oh, man.
So we were able to get them back. We were able to meet a helo. A helo met us out there from Traverse City. We were able to do a medevac from the 25, get them to wherever they needed to go.
Did you hear that? They did helo ops from a 25.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen often.
No, it does not.
It's not a thing according to the book.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, we definitely had to do a lot of, you know, debriefing on it. There was a lot of.
Did they put like the sling that like the strop down to you?
They sure did.
Yeah.
Yep. They sure did. Yep.
I was gonna say, there's no way the basket would fit.
No. We had to use strop. We had to use strop for both of them, and luckily they were both like we brought enough stuff like water and food to kind of get them back to an even keel as much as possible. But still, obviously, they were pretty shooken up. Could salvage the boat. We went back the next day. That thing was destroyed.
Right.
But yeah, I'd probably say that was probably the the hairiest one that I can remember.
Why'd you mention Pap was the commandant then?
Because
D9 Admiral.
Yeah, D9 Admiral. For the third reason, a couple weeks later, he was making a trip to our unit anyway to visit us, and he made it a point to single the crew out. We got his coin. He gave us a nice little letter write-up. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It was nice. But that's not the only case I've been on. It was just that's the one that I could... It's probably the most PG one. A lot of other ones are kind of, you know, body.
Yeah. Oh, we got it. We got it.
Well, what was... Okay. Since there were those, right? The other ones. Right. Phenomenal job, by the way, saving the people and doing helo ops on 25.
Yeah.
I still want to talk to a pilot and figure out why helo ops on 25 is such an issue. I know they're small, but I mean,
25s don't exist anymore anyway, so it's not an issue anymore.
If you drive on 29, you might sink. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I'm not worried for the helo. I'm worried for the boat.
I'm worried for the boat.
Yeah.
maybe the most impactful case. Which one did you learn the most from?
That's a really tough question.
Those are the good ones.
Yeah, those are good ones.
If you learned more from some kind of Aton situation, you can always throw one of those out there,
too. You can. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. I mean, we've had a lot of things happen as far as equipment failure on one, you know, on Aton platforms where it gets a little... Because you're bringing up, you know, these buoys that can weigh up to, like, you know, 12,500 pounds. You know, if that crane fails on you, it's hitting the deck, and, you know, but... That's a tough question because I was a 47 heavy weather coxswain too, so I did have quite a bit of I got one. So
I knew he'd get it.
Yeah. So we had a.
I like how we went back to 47s. By the way,
I know we moved
away from the buoy.
I know that was good. Yeah. So we used to have a lot of issues with snowmobilers up in on the UP of Michigan, obviously, and they never wanted to test to make sure that the lake completely froze over.
I think they assumed that they could just plane across.
They think they could just plane
I was stationed
across.
In the UP too, and I remember that.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a lift bridge that we had downtown, and for some reason, a lot of times they would hit this lift bridge, and they wouldn't even be the bridge. It would be like a pylon that was, you know, next to the bridge. Well, we got a call about people in the water, which luckily the lift bridge was only like 10-minute transit from the station, so we were able to get out there pretty quickly.
Were you guys... Was it an ice rescue team, right?
It was an ice rescue team.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've talked about ice rescue.
I think we've done
airboats a little bit. But did you guys have an airboat?
No. They didn't trust us with one.
Cool. I mean, that's. I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah. I mean, those things are crazy dangerous. But,
yeah. We took the truck out there. We got the skiff.
Can you explain the ice rescue team?
Sure.
I don't think... Most people probably don't know the Coast Guard operates on hard water and not just with helicopters. We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor. We're going to give you a key number about the future National Coast Guard Museum, and that number is 5.
There are 5 themed storylines: lifesavers around the globe, enforcers on the seas, defenders of our nation, champions of commerce, and protectors of the environment.
The exhibits and galleries in those storylines will be showcased in a 5-story museum.
And here's our favorite 5. For as little as $5 a month, you can be a plank owner and support construction of the National Coast Guard Museum.
For details on how you can get involved, go to coastguardmuseum.org/out. That's coastguardmuseum.org/OUT.
Yeah, absolutely. So
and not just breaking the hard water.
Right.
Right, yeah, yeah. Well, so this was a little ways ago when they were starting to, I believe Station Saginaw River is the... headquarters for ice rescue training.
Center of excellence.
Okay, right. So I went through that class. Basically, ice rescue is areas like where I was at in the UP of Michigan. The boats come out of the water, everything freezes up, and then you switch missions. So we basically had a truck that we kept a skiff on top of, a sled that we kept in the back, and we kept our ice commanders, which was our MSD 900s. But our dry suits, things like that, on standby. So basically, we're a search and rescue unit for the ice now.
Responding in a truck.
Right. So we were like on radio call.
Did you have the? You had a banana boat, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Was it? It would have been a banana boat at that time, right? It wasn't like was it aluminum or was it?
It was aluminum.
Okay.
The boat that we had was aluminum, but we had a sled that. Looked like a banana.
Yeah, that blew up, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
That thing was dicey too.
Oh, it really was.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of training as far as ice rescue, but we didn't have a lot of cases up there. But the cases that we did have, I did save a dog, which was kind of cool.
I like dogs.
Me too. But we did have the case to where, you know, we had snowmobilers that would hit the pylons on the bridge. So we had one that we went out there, went out, checked the ice, make sure it was able to walk on. We got out to the person. They were partially submerged, so they were kind of sticking out of the water. They weren't able to move their legs or anything like that. Got them out. And
sounds like a textbook case. Like they're hanging onto the ice shelf,
were,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
with their
like
yeah.
like Titanic or something. But we got them on the sling. And the funny thing was, I was checking to make sure or see if he had a hypothermia. And immediately, the first question he had was, "Who's paying for my snowmobile?" And I looked at him. I was like, "You must be hypothermic, because that's not going to happen."
Yeah.
I was like, "I hope you have insurance on it, buddy, because Coastguard's not paying for it." But those are the things that we'd run into quite a bit. Ice rescue is, especially up in the God bless the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, but it's definitely a different world up there.
You say you learned a lesson from it. What was the lesson? You said I got one, and then you're like, I learned the life lesson. I'm just curious, like, don't be stupid.
Check the ice before the ice.
I guess it, especially there, really opened my eyes to where, not that people are naive, but people just do what they want and not think about the consequences, especially when it came to like ice rescue.
Right.
I guess being a younger guy, I guess that really opened my eyes. Like, wow, these people really don't take precautions. Or, I mean, even if you think about like the hurricanes down south, mm-hmm. they ask for people to evacuate. What do they do? They decide they're going to stay and keeps us employed.
There's always that interview.
Yeah.
The news always finds that one family that now we've ridden out 30 hurricanes.
Yeah, we've been here for 20 years. Blah blah blah. But
it only takes one.
Yeah.
It only takes the one that you can't ride out.
And they're going to be on the roofs waving down the Coast Guard.
So yeah, and like ice rescue, I mean, life is snuffed quickly. Right.
Easily.
Right?
Quick.
Yeah, quick.
Well, I think arguably it's one of the most, we don't know, many people know about it. Even in the Coast Guard, there's a lot of people who don't know about it, but it's as dangerous as any mission we do.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you're putting, you guys have all the gear, but you're going out there in frozen, like, it's ridiculous.
It is, yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter what you're wearing. I mean, you're obviously still at risk for getting, you know, hypothermia or whatever.
Right.
So I think being on a buoy tender, I think that was probably one of the most dangerous jobs I had, you know? And,
absolutely.
You know, and I don't think that gets a lot of credit.
I don't know if it's daring or epic, but it checks the dangerous box
for
sure.
Oh, it definitely does.
Oh, yeah. I think, yeah. I would say, so my take on it, I think ice rescue is probably the most dangerous mission I've ever done. The second to that would be an Aton Evolution on a Busel, ran by someone who had no idea what they were doing.
Right.
Or at least seemed like they didn't. They did, but it was scary.
I haven't been on a 175, just like Jerry. Like, I mean, that crane could lift 20,000 pounds. That was the max the crane could lift. And we had some sinkers that were 20,000 pounds.
Yeah.
And there's just no room for error there. I mean, you can feel the whole ship flex when you pull that thing up out of the mud.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And then if that crane lets go, I forget what the cylinder or whatever that goes, if that thing goes, and that's happened before, that sinker or that buoy is going to be swinging around that deck, and you got like five or six guys and gals. It's just like a pendulum, you know. So it's buoy tenders don't get the credit they deserve. That's a dangerous platform, but it's rewarding. I think Aton, you know, it's you play hard, you work hard, you play hard,
right?
And that's what I liked about it. So
tell us about Pat Forsois.
Okay, my job over Pat Forsois was basically I was a Middle East training team member. I got to travel throughout the Middle East.
Where were you stationed? Like where?
I was stationed out of Bahrain.
Bahrain?
Out of Manama, Bahrain.
Was that when people still made per diem, like, every day of their lives over there?
That's great.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right?
So this was back in 2005.
Living in a villa, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. I lived like, maybe 10 minutes walking distance from the big Navy base there.
Okay.
Where they had a huge exchange. So it was.
And booze is legal in Bahrain.
In Bahrain, yep. It is. Yep. And that's what, yeah. Saudi Arabia, not so much.
Yep.
So
Allah can't see.
Yeah, the
Bahrain
of Allah cannot
see.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So you get the Saudis coming over on like Thursday nights, which is like our Fridays, and using up all our Wi-Fi. Like, you knew when they were coming over because they were drinking over there. But so yeah, basically I was part of a training team. I got to travel to Saudi Arabia a few times. I went to I was in Lebanon, Beirut for a week, which was pretty hectic.
What'd you do there?
We helped train their Coast Guard.
Hmm.
So they had a shoot house. So we basically taught them our versions of how to clear rooms, things like that. didn't really get a chance to see much of the country because we were escorted the whole time. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting. I got a story. I was at the E-Club there at the embassy, and I was standing outside the balcony, and I could hear, like, da-da-da-da, like, sounded like fireworks. I'm like, why do you guys do fireworks on a Wednesday night? They're like, that's AK-47 fire. I'm like, all right. I'm a Nose Guard, so I wouldn't know what that is. So... I got to travel all through the Middle East, Oman. I got underway on the ADAC, the 110 that's over there. Mm-hmm. I found out quickly that that the Persian Gulf gets very, very heavy as far as, like, seas-wise. It was, like, 20-foot seas. So I was, like, deathly sick the whole... Wow. Yeah, and they had me sleep on the mess deck, which was awesome. So I appreciated that.
And what did you do on the cutter? What was, like, the cutter's job?
We were training them, so when they would be in port... We'd run them through all their boarding team member and their boarding officer certification training, mm-hmm. so they stay up to date with that. And the nice thing is we had a shoot house that we were in charge of, so we'd run them through some basic CQB, close quarter battle scenarios, takedowns. We even had, like, simulation rounds where they could shoot each other with these little, you know, rounds or whatever.
They hurt.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, they do hurt. But we made it cool. We put smoke machines in that thing. We put speakers, so we, like, just blast music and smoke, and it was good time.
Can I tell you my best shoot house story ever? Only because it just made me smile when you were talking about it. Small shoot house near a power plant, and we told everybody beforehand, like, wear your cups, because it's, you know, that day. And then as soon as, like, it begins, all these shots are coming into the building. The first guy through the door, it got a little hectic, right? Like, you know, the group came out. Tons and tons of incoming fire. They turn around, like, kind of retreat into the building. And I don't know, probably the third guy in the line hits the door frame, you know, and just falls over. And the perfect angle to just, for someone, I saw the sim round, like, in slow motion going and just impacting. And I've never heard a scream like that in my life. And, like, you wanted to feel bad for him because that just happened.
But he
didn't
wear a
cup. But... Yeah, it was like, dude, you didn't wear a cup? What do I tell you? Yeah.
You were told. Man.
It was brutal. Do not be caught in that situation. Yeah.
You knew what you're getting into.
God. And it was so awkward, man, because he's, like, face down over the door frame as it happens. You know, it was bad. Sorry.
No, that's good.
I bet he didn't sit down for a week.
He cried a lot. I mean, rightfully so.
It makes me want to cry.
It would have been bad, man. So... I don't know. Where do you go from there?
All right, I got a question.
Sure.
Signalman in the Navy. Mm-hmm. Late 90s, right? Early 2000s?
Yeah, absolutely.
You do.
So the nice thing, we were actually utilized quite a bit on my ship. So basically we were a communicator from CO to CO. So if the CO wanted to send an encrypted message to a CO of, like, a destroyer in our battle group or whatever, they'd utilize us. We also did a lot of...
flags.
A lot of flags, a lot of semaphore. If we were doing, like, underway replenishments, which mm-hmm. we did a ton of over there.
Right.
We'd basically be, you know, 50 feet away from this other person just going back and forth with our hands sending semaphore messages. Basically, that was just training. We didn't really ever do that for messages, like, formal messages. We did a lot of the flashing light Morse code for, like, sending CO to CO messages. That's basically all. Yeah, it was
cool.
It was easy. That's probably why they got rid of the rate, and they all went quarter.
Now it's an online training.
Yeah,
right. Like, at least for your Coast Guard.
Well, one of the other reasons I got out of the Navy too, because I didn't want to be a quartermaster, because that's the route it was going. They're like, you're a quartermaster and OS, and I was like, I don't want to be either though. Well, I joined the Coast Guard. They're like, well, we just went and verged the quartermasters into the boat's main. I'm like, I can't get away from it, you know. So I mean, it is what it is. I learned it, but you know, it's because I had to.
So when you got out of Pat Forsois, mm-hmm. you get your top pick, right? The way it works?
Yeah, we talked straight to the detailer.
What was the top pick?
The Coast Guard Cutter Marcus Hanna.
Why the Marcus Hanna?
Because I loved the 175 when mm-hmm. I first joined, and I wanted to do it again, but at a first-class level. So I wanted to run a deck team. Like, I wanted my own deck team. So when I reported, they said, well, you can either be ops or deck, and I was like, I don't want ops. That's the reason I picked this, is I want to be the
back
one.
Back to that not wanting to be a quartermaster thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's why I picked. I just missed Aton. I missed the hours of a 175. You couldn't beat it. You know, you're underway for maybe 2 weeks at a time during the month, if that. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was an easy choice. to pick that.
And where was that one home ported?
Maine.
God, man.
Yeah. Cold.
It's very cold.
South Portland's a nice town. Oh, that's a really nice town.
It's,
yeah,
it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, so it was easy to extend there for a year.
Is it as cool as the West Coast Portland?
Different, but yeah.
Yeah.
I would say. I mean, it's a lot smaller.
Yeah, I was going to say. I've never been to the West Coast.
It's a small town, but a ton of brew pubs and like stuff like that, and you're real close to like places to go skiing, and it's just a gorgeous area. Like if you like that stuff.
Yeah. People are super friendly up there.
Yeah.
So you're an instructor now, or were. You were an instructor.
Were.
Isn't your next job going to be as an instructor?
Yeah, right, yeah. I'm kind of keeping it in line with the instructor thing,
Will you mentor, it's over nearly 500 students a year, right? 500 future Bosemades, give or take?
Yes.
Who were your most important mentors in the service? What are some of the most important lessons you took in general from your time in the Coast Guard?
So I took a lot from, I had a lot of bad leaders, and I've had a lot of good leaders. And
let's start with the bad ones, too.
Bad ones. So, obviously, I won't say any names.
No.
The ones I took, I always take the good from the bad, and that's why I always told my junior guys, I'm like, you know, if you have a bad leader, try to take what they're doing that you know you wouldn't want to do as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I was non-rate, just coming out of the Navy, going to 175, I was already older. So I already had to suck the pride away. You know, these BM3s were like 18, 19-year-old guys, like, trying to tell me how I could swab a deck, which I just got done doing that for 4 years in America. So you really have to suck that pride away. But it was the senior people, like, you know, some of the chiefs that just, like, I don't know if it was because I was prior service or they were just mad because I was older there as a non-rate, but I just felt like I really got hammered hard early in my career. And that's one of the reasons I was like, you know what, I need to find a rate. I went to BMA school from there, and I take their leadership, their bad leadership, and I would just make it into a positive, being like, I'm not going to be that guy when I get to that point in my career. You know, micromanaging is the worst possible thing you can ever have as a leader. I ran into that quite a bit. So,
yeah, especially in this organization, I think, right? Like, I mean, if you micromanage people that are like supposed to have a bias for action,
sure,
like you kind of stifled the whole model.
And it's a small organization too. So,
well, I think something we've gotten better at, though, and everybody loves to complain about millennials, even though probably all three of us sitting here qualify technically. I know when we were coming up, because you and I joined the Coast Guard about the same time. I wasn't prior service, but
I was old guard by that point.
Oh yeah, I know.
Same.
All year. It's got like five more years. I want to learn stuff. Like, I think most people join the Coast Guard and we want to know how to do it. Like, I want to be the coxswain, or I want to be the good crewman.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think we've gotten a lot better at telling people what they need to do to be that, instead of, here, go do it. And then when you screw up, we make you feel dumb.
Oh, yeah.
That's, I mean, is that what you experienced? Oh, yes, it's kind absolutely. Of probably what you're talking about a lot of. And you learned.
Yeah.
You certainly learned, and it was a model that worked for a long time, but it wasn't a lot of fun coming up that way.
No. And I have nothing against how, like, I hate how they say, like, the old guard or how, you know what I mean? I have nothing against how they used to run things, but you also have to be pretty transparent to realize times are changing.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the Coast Guard's, I mean, even the 20 years that I've done, obviously it's changed since the time I joined to the time I'm retiring.
Right.
But it's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, it's evolution. You know, it's just how it is, you know. But a lot of people get stuck in their ways, and that's where I think it becomes an issue, you know, and they don't want to budge. And I ran into that quite a bit when I first joined. So, but yeah, it's definitely got better. Definitely got better.
Yeah, man, now I'm thinking deep. Like, those were deep. It was deep. Yeah. Oh, take a breath.
Gotta bring a little drama to the show.
Yeah, right? What was that?
Yeah.
But I always tell people, too, like, you know, I think these days, I agree wholeheartedly. Most people possess the capability to do the job and the desire, right? They're just not, maybe they don't get there as fast as some others.
Right.
Sure.
That's what I always say. It's like, if we got to fail someone or whatever, like, we honestly just kind of have to hold you back until you're on the same page as everybody else, because I have to be able to trust you.
Well, I mean, I think I see capability a lot more often. Like, sometimes you get people who just aren't a good fit in what they're in.
That's true.
But we generally don't have many people that don't have the desire.
Right.
Like, that's a pretty uncommon problem.
That's definitely a minority, That's definitely,
Which is good, because you can see it right away.
Right.
Like, you were not meant to be here for whatever reason.
Right.
And it's not It's not capability. It's more like, it's probably more due to your attitude.
Right.
Yeah.
It could be just due to, like, they're better for a different rate. Maybe they just weren't meant to be, like, a boatswain or an MK. Maybe they've been better at Yeoman or SKs or whatever. And there's nothing wrong with any of those rates, obviously. It's just you don't fit that mold.
No, yeah. OS is hiring all the time.
All the time.
Rank fast, dude.
Yeah.
Now you regret it, don't you? He's like, ah, oh, man.
You're talking about a retired Master Chief right now.
Oh, man. That's funny. All right, give us one more. Give us a closing one.
Okay.
You got a law enforcement story?
No, but I went to New Zealand for 3 months.
You did, man. Yeah, we didn't. Yeah. How did we miss that? We talked about it at the beginning, and then
did you go see the Hobbit houses?
I did.
Sweet.
I did. It was actually. I took.
That's the one thing I saw on his Facebook. Yeah. I was like, I was expecting to see like a waterfall or like cliffs or something, and it was you at the Hobbit house.
Well, no, it was a speculation.
You'd go.
I'd totally go. Yeah, I mean, everybody'd go, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I remember talking to the guy that was my sponsor there. I was like, "There's one thing I need to do when I'm there." I was like, "I need to see where the Hobbits live." He's like, "Of course you do. You're American." They don't even think about that kind of stuff over there.
Right.
So an opportunity came up in April. I was asked from the school chief if I wanted to go to New Zealand for 3 months to basically just kind of not mentor but assist in their training program, because they have a seamanship program there, but they just don't have the assets to facilitate. Like, they have an amazing seamanship building that has a boat in it to where they can do towing, anchoring, you name it, they can do it inside. They just don't have the people to facilitate because they're a very small Navy.
What a reverse problem.
I know.
Right.
Yeah.
I know.
Wow.
So I was lucky enough, I was the first U.S. service member in 40 years to go over there and assist in the training. Came right from Master Chief, the Coast Guard's office, to get me over there, which was awesome. Did that from April till July.
Was there like a lot of pomp and circumstance when you got off the plane?
As far as like,
I don't know, like you're the first American.
It was great. I was treated like an officer there. It was great. Like, you know, I probably shouldn't even say that. But like, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I was in the senior mess, which is basically like their chief's club. Like,
right.
It was amazing. They treated me so good over there. Like, I knew when I flew back into the States, I flew into Houston. I was like, okay, I'm back in the States, because just the ignorance. You know what I mean? Like, just people treating you like crap again. It's like, but over there, it was just, I mean, I can't say one bad thing about the New Zealand people. Like, it was an amazing time. And I'm going to go back. I'm going to go visit them. I actually have made lifelong friends. The warrant officer that was my sponsor there, he's going to be here in January with his family, and they're going to stay with us for a week.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, depending where I'm at.
And then you get a payback trip, right?
It better be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
no, I have no problem finding a place to stay over there. Just that's how they are over there.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
What do they run? What kind of boats do they run?
Oh, they have ships, but it's mostly like, I mean, it's their Navy. Like, their Coast Guard over there is like our auxiliary. Like, they don't do, they don't get paid, they don't do search and rescue, stuff like that. Their Navy does that, and their Navy is super small. So they have ships over there, but the manpower to facilitate them kind of lacks a little bit.
Are they hiring?
They were ready to hire me before I left. They said, hey, you're retiring, let's get you back over there. But the only thing, it's a little expensive to live over there. It was definitely a thought, because I don't have to.
That just means they got to pay you a little more to live over there.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Just saying.
But if anybody from New Zealand's listening, Phil's looking for a job.
I was going to say, I might take that call.
I would in a heartbeat.
Just to consider.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know their specific, like, what they, but I just know they have some ships, they have some small boats that they run for basic search and rescue and things like that. But solid, solid people, definitely.
So you provided the seamanship know-how, basically.
Yeah, so basically what I did over there is, after the first week, I kind of wanted to see how they did things. Without being like that American type, you know, I'd started showing them how we do certain things, not saying they did what was wrong.
Right.
You know, I mean, there was one thing that they did, which I took back with me, I thought was a great idea. Say you have to put a surface swimmer in the water. What we usually do is we have that person facing the victim and they start swimming towards that person. They had a scenario, what if the sea state is, you know, 3 to 4 foot seas or even 5, where you can't see that victim anymore? They have their surface swimmer swim back on their back like this and having a pointer going towards them the whole time. Once they get to that person, the person that was pointing to them does this, they turn around, They have the person, and they bring them back. I thought that was a great idea.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe we do that in the Coast Guard somewhere that I've never seen, but I took that from, I was like, it's not a bad idea.
I don't think it's in the book. I'm sure there's somebody listening right now who did something like that. Had that SAR case. They were like,
going, I'm going to go ahead.
Are they south of the equator?
Yes.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Only somebody in the southern hemisphere would swim backwards to it. No, I'm just kidding.
There goes that job.
Toilets flush backwards?
I believe.
No, that was one of the first things I was asked
did
about.
Did you check that?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. That was the first thing I checked.
So, do they?
No, they don't. It's just basic.
I've been lied to my entire life.
I was a little disappointed. I'm not going to lie. A little disappointed.
Did they have bidets?
Nope. No. They didn't. They did the Middle East, though.
Yeah no. You know what's funny, though, is like you were saying that you kind of watched and you integrated, right?
Sure, yeah.
I don't know. I always notice when you go to certain other countries, right, you almost have to act like the typical American as you walk in there and you're like, no, you're all doing it wrong. You're going to kill me or yourselves.
Well, I kind of did that.
We all know what Phil's talking about, but we're not going to say it.
Yeah, right. I did do a little bit of the vessel boarding search and seizure training with them, and I did have to critique quite a bit just because, obviously, I don't want to see anybody get hurt.
Right.
But they were going in there like, you know, guns blazing, like if they, it's like any other country, I guess. So the same thing in Bahrain. Just take your time, you know, do what you're supposed to do.
I think there is a happy middle, though, between like guns blazing and then, some of the early 90s stuff that was in manuals for a long time.
Like, the quick peaks.
Yeah, there's got to be there's a happy middle.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, tell us what you're going to do now.
So I was lucky enough to get a contract instructor job down at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. Down in Charleston, South Carolina. So, as of right now, I'll be starting December 2nd.
Man, retirement.
It's like it's right around the corner.
Retirement is quick.
It is. That's why I'm on terminal right now. So, basically, they have me in either spot. They haven't told me specifically what I'm teaching yet. I could be either doing the Maritime Law Enforcement Academy, which is the boarding officer training, or I could be instructing the MEA school that's down there as well. So, either one of those, I guess, wherever they need me. They're going to put me.
Either way, they need a bosmate.
They need a bosmate down there. So it's going to happen.
It's obvious. You need oversight on that kind of thing.
And they will know, too, that I was a bosmate, especially if I'm teaching MEA.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations on
that
job.
Yeah, that's great. Absolutely. I got very lucky. Very lucky.
Well, hey, we so much appreciate your time today, man. Thank you for your stories. We thank you for your 20 years of service.
Thank you.
Even though some of it was in the Navy, but that's okay.
The sea time didn't count.
Yeah, the sea time didn't count, so it doesn't work.
But no, thank you. Thanks for coming on, and thanks for your service.
Yeah, Jay, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate the time. That was fun.
We also have to say thank you to the Liberty Lounge, too.
Absolutely.
They let us come in on an off day and do this show here. And the plan is to do a few live shows here in front of some of the Yorktown A School students. So one of the first guests that we have lined up for that live show, we would have got Jerry here for it, but he's traveling down south, as you know. And one of our first guests that we have lined up, I promise you would not want to miss it. So as we push a little closer to the time that he's going to come on, we're going to get the word out to everybody. Please come out, check him out, give the Liberty Lounge 2 some business, and try not to get an AI or anything crazy. But Bill and I will be completely sober and not buying anyone drinks at the bar. But again, thanks to Liberty Lounge 2.
We didn't say we wouldn't accept drinks at the bar. We said we wouldn't buy anyone drinks at the bar.
Yeah. But thank you guys for listening. Thanks for keeping us up on those top charts, and look forward to the next one.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Before we end this, we want to give a plug for some people and organizations that we believe in.
The Coast Guard Foundation supports the brave men and women of the Coast Guard when they need it the most, providing everything from financial aid to families in crisis to scholarships and playground equipment. As a nonprofit 501c3 charity, they count on our donations to deliver this support. Visit CoastGuardFoundation.org. That's CoastGuardFoundation.org to read about their programs and donate what you can to support those who guard our nation's coast.
Another one to check out is the Always Ready Collective, which delivers art by and for some daring fighters of the sea. Head over to Etsy, Facebook, or Instagram and search Always Ready Collective to check out their Coast Guard and Maritime-focused tattoo flash, pinups, and propaganda. You won't be disappointed. Anyone who gets one of their designs inked on their body will get featured on their feed and can be sent a care package on the house. Find a design you like, some blank canvas, and get it done. Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, Look us up at theyhadtogooout.com or your favorite podcast platform. And like, comment, subscribe, and share so we can keep the momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Look for a new episode every Sunday. Until then, fair winds and following seas.